Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Twin Peaks PowerCast on Podcasting Them Softly. We are excited, probably doesn't even begin to describe what we're feeling here, having experienced the first 2 hours of Twin Peaks, The Return, and so we put together an all-star panel here. We've got Kyle Jonathan with us. Hello, Kyle.
Hey, hey. Thanks for having me again.
Absolutely. We've got my longtime partner in crime here, Nate Hill. Nate, how's it going?
Good, man.
Awesome.
Stoked to be here.
We have a noob with us, but definitely a huge Twin Peaks fan. Can't wait to hear his thoughts on the new stuff. Bill Bance. Bill, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, of course, Frank is with us. Frank, how the hell are you?
Good. I'm glad I got the end credit. I feel like Robert De Niro on the all straight to VOD stuff he's been doing lately. So
there you go.
This is exciting.
And
this is exciting
Frank,
for me.
And
yes,
Frank Mangarelli. But anyway,
yes, this is your show. You run with it, baby.
Well, boy, I don't know what to say. I think I've now watched, and I'll be honest, we're not going to talk about episodes 3 and 4, even though I think most of us have seen them. We're focused here just on the initial return that I think most people have seen. I think I've probably watched all of them now about 3 times through. I don't know how many times you guys have, but...
Yeah, 3 times for me.
As is typical with Lynch, there's always something new to see. It gets better with each viewing. I can definitely say that. And the first thing I want to lead off with is, how about fucking Kyle MacLachlan? I mean, he is clearly this show. And I'd read this. One of the few things Lynch said about this is that this was going to be Coop's story. And the way that they're handling it so far and giving him a lot of heavy lifting to do, he just looks like he is in heaven, like he's having a great time. What do you guys think of his work? What do you think of Evil Coop?
I love Evil Coop. Mm-hmm. He's like Evil Roadhouse Coop or something, you know?
he does. He's got that kind of white trash thing.
It's not often you get to see Kyle MacLachlan, like, I guess, play a badass in that respect. Like, sometimes he's a suave badass, like a 007 type guy, but he's never really like the down and dirty badass. And David Lynch has just flipped him on his head, and I think he's great. I love it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think it's really fun that, you know, this is the kind of thing we got to see Cheryl Lee do in the original series. Obviously, she played Laura Palmer, she played Maddie Ferguson, and then she was, in fact, if the original season 3 plan had gone through, was going to be brought back to play yet another iteration of herself. And the fact that Coop's getting to do that now is delightful. And as you know, if you've seen episode 3 or 4, there's certainly more to come on that front. I think he's pretty marvelous. And he was a villain on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. a couple years ago and had a good time with it, but it wasn't the same kind of character. And this guy has just got flipping ice in his veins. He's scary. You know, Lynch always does a good villain, and the fact that he's turned Coop into a good villain is just so fun to watch. Kyle, your thoughts?
on MacLachlan, I think he's doing probably the best work of his career. I love the contacts. I love all of the scenes in the lodge. I was talking with Bill. We've been kind of going back and forth on our theories on what's going on, and I love his interaction, his scene with Laura, where the record skips every time she moves. I think that's probably one of my favorite scenes of the new, of the return. I'm still not sold on him being like Bob, so to speak. But I really love, I love everything about the, both sides of him actually. And then obviously the other side is to come, but, I think my favorite part just overall about this is that I have been so let down by the hype train over the past, like, year. Mm-hmm. You know, like, all these great films are being made, and we get all excited, and then we see, well, at least for me, I see a lot of them, and I'm like, man, that wasn't what I was expecting. It wasn't as good. This wasn't what I was expecting, but it was even better. I mean, it's literally Lynch unrestrained doing his thing, and it's divisive. It's not going to catch everybody. People are going to be confused and talking about it. And I just love that it's like mainlining Lynch through Twin Peaks. I mean, yes, it's a continuation. But for me, I know we talked about this a little bit, like, this was like Inland Empire, the TV series, for me. Not like the grainy presentation and all that kind of stuff, just the idea that it's literally him just playing with all these ideas, but unlike Inland Empire, it's very clear he has a plan.
Mm-hmm.
There's something going on. I'm blown away. I can't remember the last time that I've watched, me and Frank have been talking about The Leftovers, and I love that, but this is like next level
mm-hmm.
art.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, there's the serialized dramas that we're all spoiled with on cable, and then there's the new Twin Peaks, and I think this is pretty next-level stuff. But I agree with what you're saying about Inland Empire, because the kind of, you know, some of the more gonzo technique is there, but there's the grounding influence of obviously having Frost back as a writing partner. And also having, you know, the constraints of working in the same universe and not, if, you know, to keep it honest to the universe, clearly there's a lot of room to play in, and we're seeing that here the first couple hours. But there is still structure, there's geography, there's characters, there's a variety of things that kind of hold it together for me. Bill, I want to hear about some of these theories. What do you guys think is going on in the Lodge?
Good question. Can you hear me?
Absolutely.
Okay. Hold on, I'm trying to think. Is that Nate or something? I hear like a lot loud. You guys hearing that feedback, or is it just me?
There's a little bit of background noise. It's not
okay,
too bad. Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, but I love this whole evil poop thing.
Mm-hmm.
Especially that scene in the hotel room with him. What's that girl's name again? Daria?
With Daria, oh yeah.
That scene was fucking incredible to me.
Yeah, that was kind of a reminder, because people think of Lynch as, you know, people who don't really pay much attention, they think of Lynch as, you know, he's the weird guy. But really, he's actually very good at thrillers and suspense. He's done a lot of work in the genre, and that scene, the way it ratchets up, and you know it's not going to go well. And you know it's not going to go well because they have this exchange, what, three times? Are you going to kill me now? Yeah, I'm going to kill you. And then she tries to escape, and then he drags her back. And are you going to kill me now? Yeah, I'm going to kill you. And it just,
yeah.
Oh, it's so painful. He knows how to bring the pain, and he really does with that sequence too. But I want to flip back to the Lodge, though, because I'm kind of curious, having seen the third and fourth episodes, knowing what happens. I mean, you basically see him at the end of the second hour getting kicked out of the Lodge to go who knows where. And I'm really curious to see if we spend that much more time in the Lodge, or if, I mean, I'm sure we will, because obviously the Lodge is trying to get its hands back on Evil Coop and all that. But it seems like they've got a lot of other areas that they want to explore, and they've kind of brought back, I think, the extent of the Lodge characters, you know, the cast. I think we've seen them all, those who are still surviving that we saw in the original. And, you know, and then obviously the recasting of Little Mike as amazing David Lynch sculpture. Yeah, that's one of my favorite things. I'm like, you know, they had a part written for him and they couldn't make the contract work. So they just, you know, Lynch just Lynched it. He's like, all right.
Wait, so.
Evolution of the arm.
Yeah.
Yeah, not to cut you off here, but I'm a Twin Peaks layperson. I've only seen the first season. I love the film Fire Walk With Me.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the armless guy is the midget.
The arm.
Armless?
The arm is Little Mike. Was in the original. That is his title, I believe, as revealed in the final episode of the original run when they are in the Black Lodge. And
I think it's actually in the movie that...
Is that in the
find
movie?
Out that he's the arm. Because he does the thing like, you know, he makes the sound that he makes and he says, I am the arm. And then I think that's in the movie.
He does that.
Yeah, it is in the movie, yes.
I'm pretty sure, though, the scene where he sits down next to the one-armed man in the Lodge and he puts his hand on his shoulder where he's missing an arm and he says, I am the arm. That's
That could be
it. I believe that, and I've been watching a lot of Twin Peaks lately, so it's a little bit of a blur. But, and you know, Frank, conceptually and everything, it's all still a little bit of a blur. We've had 25 fucking years to sit around and theorize on this, and we still don't know all the answers, right? But that character, the arm, that was, he was also, just to complicate things, he's also known as the Man from Another Place. That was his first title, because he's really kind of the first Black Lodge resident that you meet in the series. That was what he was originally referred to. But yeah, they could not come to they couldn't figure out a contract. Basically, I think he asked for a lot of money, and I think Lynch and Showtime said, it's not really there for you. You know, here's what we
the little guy?
Yeah.
And, yeah, he asked for like $1 million or something like that.
Yeah, he wanted a pretty good chunk of change, and they were like, you know, thanks, but no thanks. And then he, of course, got on social media and tried to spread a bunch of clearly blatant lies about what a twisted asshole David Lynch is. And I think he's pretty well shut himself out of that whole community at this point. And after what he did, I think it's probably a good call. But anyway, I hope that lengthy answer kind of helps sort it out a little bit, Frank. It is a wee bit confusing. And,
so, Frank, now he's the tree, essentially. That's basically his next... You know, Pokemon.
Metamorphosis.
His evolution. Yeah, his Pokemon evolution.
Yeah,
and then we see his doppelganger, too, because then his doppelganger is the one who pops up and kicks, McLaughlin out into who knows where. So just to complicate things a little more.
No, see, because this is interesting for me to watch. I dropped the ball on not watching Twin Peaks because I'm busy/lazy, and I didn't catch all the way up, even though I had, a year to do it.
About 25,
I know, Tim. But what's fascinating for me to watch this is that I understand probably about 5-10% of it, which I'm not sure how much I'm supposed to fully understand, but... Back to what Kyle was saying, and I saw you write this, I think, after Sunday. You might have wrote it Sunday night or Monday morning, but essentially what you said in a nutshell, and you just addressed it a bit ago, was that this is more of a service to Inland Empire and who Lynch is as an auteur than it is to a straight-up Twin Peaks sequel, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, I mean, and I might be proven wrong, I think it's probably going to circle around to... What to that? I call it like the Rockwellian deception, like the whole the blue velvet, down home America is pretty on the surface, but there's all this corruption and evil and stuff underneath, like two different worlds. And there's that kookiness of it, but like the reason I immediately thought more of Inland Empire than anything else was I can't remember the last time I was so uncomfortable, in a good way, those first two episodes, I mean, I was like holding my breath, and you know there's all this awful stuff that's going to happen. And so I think this is what he always wanted to do, and because he's on Showtime and they can be a little bit more graphic and more, he's got complete control that we don't, they're not competing for ratings to get another season. At least I don't think they are. It's just him doing his work, and I completely unrestrained, and that's why I kind of thought like Inland Empire, because it's such an experimental, divisive kind of film. It's my tied with Mulholland Drive for my all-time favorite film, but I don't want to take up a ton of time, but my current theory, I guess, going off what Tim was saying with the lodge and all that, I don't think Cooper, evil Cooper, is Bob per se. Like, I've always held this theory that Fire Walk With Me, the town that Desmond is investigating, right, like in the beginning,
Deer Meadow.
I feel like that's the aftermath of the lodge doing what it does to people in a town. Like, they're these like used up kind of hosts that the spirits kind of manipulated into doing all this stuff. And it's kind of like the aftermath, right? And then it moves to Twin Peaks, and like you have the man from another place, the arm. To me, like, it's almost kind of Lovecraftian in that he's Nyarlathotep, the priest of the, he's kind of like the emissaries for the spirits. Mm-hmm. He's like the switchboard. And then you have these different, you have Bob and the giant and all these different kind of this pantheon that Lynch has created, and they walk around and people, and, you know, like Matthew Lillard, that's kind of what my, you know, what's going on with him, like that scene with the specter in the jail cell.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, that's like whatever was possessing him, like, you know, like leaving maybe, and like Bob's kind of in the middle, or no, sorry, Evil Dale is in the middle of it because of his interaction with Lillard's wife.
Mm-hmm.
But the one thing I was talking to Bill that I noticed on my rewatch that's very telling of the spirit's presence in our world is at the dinner scene in the diner with Evil Cooper and Daria and the other guy, I can't think of his name, Dale maybe? Evil Cooper is eating cream corn.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's like his, you know, garbozy or whatever, you know, like that.
Yeah.
That's what, like, if you look at his plate, it's like an empty bowl of cream corn.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what it means per se, but that's just kind of what, and I'm interested to see the connection between the box in New York,
mm-hmm.
and my assumption is that if the person behind that is the same person that is behind the Las Vegas. The money in Las Vegas, the money man?
Yes, there is a billionaire, a mysterious, big,
right.
powerful guy that they keep talking about that, you know, spoiler alert, even as far as episode 4, we still have not seen or met or really learned any more about. But he also, it sounds like he might be the one who's pulling the strings. Somebody's gunning for Evil Coop. And it sounds like he might be pulling the strings behind that, too. I'm really curious, talking about kind of setting up things in other cities, you mentioned Deer Meadow. I'm curious to see what is going on in South Dakota, because clearly there's a spirit element involved with that guy who really reminded me of Jürgen Prochnow now in Fire Walk With Me. He kind of looked like that, the same costume design, you know, the sooted out dude who disappears and then his head floats away. There's that, but then there's also, you know, Cooper, Evil Cooper's clearly involved because after Lillard's wife tells him to fuck off in prison, he promptly is waiting for her there in, I assume, George's place and shoots her. So he's got to have something to do with it, too. So, and, you know, could be maybe he's got a new killing buddy. He used to have Mike. So maybe now he's got someone else that he was running with, and maybe that was Matthew Lillard. I don't know. Real quick, and we got to shut up and get some of you other guys in here too. But I love the scene with Lillard and his wife because they do a great job. Lillard does a great job selling you on, oh my gosh, this guy is just a nice guy who's caught up in something that he's got nothing to do with. And then as it goes on with him, he is. You know, it comes out, there's kind of an indication he might be screwing his secretary or something. And then it comes out, really, that he has been having an affair. And then his wife turns on him, and he turns on her. And that's another scene where I just think all of a sudden it gets ratcheted up really quickly. And it's great character work for both writing and directing, and clearly in performance, that you really go from feeling for this guy to wondering what the fuck is this guy really about. I thought that was so nicely done. But Bill, tell me about some of the other, what are some of your other favorite things you've seen so far in the first 2 hours?
First 2 hours, I really like the scene of the Black Lodge, where Laura Palmer removes her face and it's the white light.
Yeah.
Like almost like this, it reminds me of the same light that took her away in Fire Walk With Me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That was pretty... Yeah, so I'm not sure if that means I wonder if that means is she like a resident of the Black Lodge or is she like just visiting the lodge at that particular moment?
I don't even know. You know, it's so mysterious. And going
exactly.
back to what Kyle was talking about, I think just the way the actual math. I mean, I think we're always trying to math out exactly what's going on. Are you inhabiting people and making them do this, like Bob did with Leland? Are you kind of in charge of a doppelganger that's out running around, but that's not actually you? And the same, you know, Laura, what is your story? Well, she's dead, but here she is, and she's filled with light. Oh, and then, you know, God knows what happens when she gets sucked upstairs, but clearly nothing good.
Yeah.
And it's just fun to theorize about. I was thinking before the season started, it kind of hit me that, you know, once these spirits touch any human, they're just a regular, normal person, that they're just never the same again. That there's, you know, and that there is probably varying degrees of supernatural activity going on within them throughout the, you know, the rest of their lives. And so that's why I'm curious to see how everything does play out with Evil Coop, just because it does kind of read like something that is very much what Bob would do, but not the way Bob used to do it. So
he's had 25 years to refine himself.
He really has. Yeah. You know, it's funny. I was thinking about this earlier today too. When you first see the doppelganger, and they show that scene, Frank, I don't know if you knew this or not, but they do use a few scenes, the flashback scenes from the Black Lodge are from the final episode of the original run. So when they show Coop getting, you know, nailed by his doppelganger, that's in the original episode and the original final episode. And he seems like he's having such a good time, like he's really delighted to get out of the lodge and go do evil. But like 25 years later, he seems kind of tired. You know, he's a pretty humorless character, which surprised me a little bit because I figured there might be a little more mustache twirling stuff going on.
And vulnerable,
mm-hmm.
is what struck me, like with his introduction in that great scene in the house with the car, and you know, I mean, it's just so, it sets the tone. But then as it goes on, he's kind of frantic, mm-hmm. without being like emotional.
Yeah,
like you definitely get the sense that he knows he's being pursued and that some kind of end, you know, maybe he's going to be put back in the box of the Black Lodge or something like that.
Right.
It definitely like grounded the villain as opposed to the Bob, the mm-hmm. traditional sense of being kind of, I don't want to say like omnipotent, but you know what I mean? Like he was more just like kind of like the monster in the closet kind of thing, like coming out,
right.
and doing stuff. Mm-hmm. Like now he's like in and he's walking amongst us, or if it is him, I'm still not convinced it's him, but,
mm-hmm.
But just that character, like the evil doppelganger, is very, exactly, like he's very like world weary. He's tired.
mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. No, he is, and I think you speak to a good point, which is that he is not a cookie cutter, two dimensional villain. There's actual stakes and perils for him too, which, you know, again, makes it all the more interesting. Instead of just, oh, the creeper shows up every once in a while to creep and has a laugh and takes off. So I really like what they're doing there too. Frank,
I have a quick question. Mm-hmm. I'm asking this question for a friend. Now, is the Black Lodge something that's explained thoroughly, or is this something that's a concept that each individual person probably has their own interpretation for?
Okay, real quick primer on season 2. The big bad that they introduce after Laura Palmer's killer is revealed is Dale Cooper's old nemesis, a guy named Wyndham Earle. Who's a pretty damn good villain by the end of the show as well.
Is that who Michael Parks plays?
That is not Michael Parks,
no.
Michael Parks helps run the whorehouse up north of the border, One-Eyed Jacks. And he's actually not in the show too much at all. Although he makes an impression, of course, because he's Michael Parks. But no, this is, what is his name, Kenneth Welch? Is that?
Kenneth Welch.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, from The Void.
Yes, and from The Void. The main big bad in The Void,
yep.
is the big bad in season 2. And they come to discover late in that season, he has been looking for this place called the Black Lodge. That's the first time you get the name put on it. It's probably with about 5 episodes left in the original run of the series. He's been looking for this place. They find a big cave painting that they think might lead them there. And then they finally figure out at the end it's a physical map of Twin Peaks, leads them to Glastonbury Grove, which is that little place, you know, with the circle of rocks and the oil and the trees that shows up in Fire Walk With Me. Wyndham Earle grabs Cooper's girlfriend, who's played by Heather Graham. I'm surprised Heather Graham didn't come back for these. Like, she's busy with anything else. And so he grabs her and kind of uses her mojo to get into the lodge. Coop goes after them, and that's when they have probably the weirdest fucking duel that you've ever seen. You got to watch the last episode of the run.
Okay, so essentially what you're saying is that it's how Cooper gets into the Black Lodge, and he's been there for 25 years.
He gets stuck.
And his
there.
Doppelganger got out, which is Roadhouse Cooper.
Yeah.
See, now I feel like this is weird. This is an interesting dynamic for me, because I feel like I'm the guy who tries to talk to me about Star Wars that doesn't know anything about Star Wars.
Right.
And now I'm sitting here with the guys talking about Twin Peaks. Now, let me ask you, this portal that Coop escapes from, is that new?
Yes.
Yes.
With the witch lady that cuts those two people up, which
that's
is one of the most...
Completely new. Yep.
That's one of the most intense things I've ever seen. Nate and I were actually talking about
amazing,
that the other night.
It? Yeah, it really is. No, we don't know what that is. We know clearly because, well, I guess I shouldn't say. there is a connection made in the third episode to
right.
the lodge. And I think that's kind of everyone's assumption, is that they're trying to catch something coming out of the lodge, since that's kind of the main spigot for supernatural activity that we've been given so far. But then again, maybe he's got a whole other thing he's going to throw at us. Who knows? But yeah, that is new, and damn, that was horrifying.
That's another instance where it's like, we keep mentioning Inland Empire, and that type of horror, or that type of, like, really stark, kind of robotic, ghostly imagery is more what you'd find in that movie as opposed to the, I don't know, it's kind of like more organic feeling of Bob or the little guy or Laura screaming or something more theatrical. That
yeah.
definitely feels more like a Eraserhead or Inland Empire, that type of aesthetic, you know?
I feel like the Inland Empire experience probably got Lynch just up enough on the digital trickery that's available, because, you know, prior to Inland Empire, he was a big film guy, obviously, and I think most of his effects, and he's certainly used a lot of effects in his day, but they've all been practical. And one of the fun things that we're seeing here, especially with the lodge breakdown, especially with that scene with the box, is him expanding his kind of nightmare palette a little bit by, you know, using some digital technology. And I think he started to do that with Inland Empire. For me, that's what comes to mind when it was reminding me of Inland Empire. And I do agree with you. It does remind me of Inland Empire pretty frequently.
What do you guys think about the casting in this? Since you guys are all Twin Peaks diehards, this plethora...
You mean the new cast?
Yeah, the plethora...
I love it.
Of new cast members, and I mean, we don't have to get into 3 and 4 since you guys will be back to cover that. But Ashley Judd shows up. Last time you seen Ashley Judd in something?
Yeah, it's been a little.
She did a show called Missing a while ago, and that she's been missing since then. So that's a lot of time.
The show works. Yeah.
The weird thing is, I didn't realize that was Ashley Judd till episode the third time
I watched it. I thought it was Diane Lane, to be honest, which I'm kind of ashamed of now. But it was cool to see her for sure.
Yeah,
I think that I love the casting choices. I think that it's very cool in that he's kind of building, you know, he's just opening the floodgates to his own creative universe, and he's bringing in basically everyone he's ever worked with, you know, that he could get, and just kind of. It really is a new vision. It's a new world built on the remnants of what he started. And I think that the fresh faces are not, you know, because Lynch doesn't do anything predictable. I don't think it's to get, you know, to draw people in.
Right.
He doesn't care about that. It's more to show that his world evolves. You know, it's aged. You know, this is, you know, it has been 25 years. And he repopulated the world. One thing I do want to get in here is I love Hawk and
yes.
there's a line, I'm gonna misquote it, but I think it was in the first two seasons, I don't think it was in, yeah, where basically Cooper says, if I'm ever lost, I hope you're the man to find me, something
yep.
to that.
Absolutely.
I really think that he's gonna be I hesitate to say hero because I'm not sure there are heroes in Twin Peaks, but he's going to be a very pivotal character. And the scenes with the log lady on the phone,
brilliant.
You know, yeah, I mean, one just, you know, and
heartbreaking,
track,
yeah.
Because we lost her, and I, you know, and you could tell she was in a lot of pain when she was filming them, but I really enjoyed the scenes with Hawk and him finding the portal and just... Yeah, I'm very excited. That's probably what I'm most excited to see what happens.
Mm-hmm. I think there are heroes.
What do you guys think
Peaks.
Of?
I was just going to say, I think there are true good guys in Twin Peaks, but I also think Lynch loves tearing them apart. So we'll see if Hawk gets the same treatment. Anyway, Nate, sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to mention Jennifer Jason Leigh showing up right at the end there. What'd you guys think? I thought that was great.
That is, oh, my God. You know what? I did not recognize her. Now that all kind of hits me like a ton of bricks. Yeah. That's and she was effective.
So she's like the Bonnie to Evil Dale's Clyde or whatever. Or so it seems like it might go in that direction. You know, mm-hmm. like the evil chick sidekick. She'd be perfect for that too.
Oh yeah, well, coming off Hateful Eight, yeah, it's like she was born to play it,
exactly.
Right? Yeah, but back to your question about the cast, Frank. I was most. It was funny because when they finally released a trailer that showed new characters, that got me the most excited for the new episodes. And so far, I really like. It's definitely Coop's story, but I really like everything else that's been going on too. I'm fascinated to see what's going on in South Dakota. I'm even curious to see, you know, what's going on back in Twin Peaks, although, funny enough, we haven't spent that much time there. What the fuck is Dr. Jacoby up to with his shovels? I want to hear theories on that.
I think that'll keep going. I think that'll be, we won't find out what he's doing for a while. It'll be like some running joke that something with the shovels, that one thing takes no one location, nothing happens. I don't know, I get this kind of running joke feeling.
You're probably
right.
When he flips
up his glasses, though, and you see the red and the blue one, that was one of the best, like, re-entries of any of those characters.
Yeah, that was pretty awesome. I'm looking forward to seeing how they bring Sherilyn Fenn back, too, because that's got to happen soon, I would hope, anyway.
Yeah,
that should be a lot of fun. So, jump in, Frank.
Jump in.
What do you think? As this noob who didn't watch season two and have these gaps and only understand 10% or so, what's standing out to you? What do you like?
Well, first my heart's broken that it appears Chris Isaak is not going to be into the new season unless they're somehow saving that and he's going to reappear. But what's exciting for me is that this is the new Lynch we've gotten since Inland Empire, and this is probably going to be the last form of Lynch in this medium. I don't know if it's going to get a second season, because this season's 18 episodes long. It's a long season, considering all seasons are now, 8-10 episodes at the max?
Mm-hmm.
Even broadcast television has shifted towards that. But to me, it's an interesting build on mythology that I really don't understand a lot of, but I'm intrigued upon. And I've watched the first three episodes twice. I still haven't watched the fourth episode. But I want to circle back to what you guys were saying, and I think you guys collectively agreed on this. I've never seen Kyle MacLachlan so good.
Mm-hmm.
And it's when's the last time you've seen him in something so compelling? I think when he played Cary Grant in a movie, a couple of 10 years ago, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see him in Agents of
S.H.I.E.L.D. He hasn't done
him
a whole lot lately.
Yeah,
right.
he's kind of bounced around. He's had a weird career. You know, I think post-Twin Peaks, he made some movies, you know, he was obviously in some things like Showgirls and The Doors.
Showgirls?
And, yeah.
Right.
The Hidden.
That's one of my favorite movies ever, yeah. So he's awesome in that. But that was actually pre-Twin Peaks. That was probably around the time he was making Dune and Blue Velvet and stuff. But he never quite broke through to being a big star. Outside of, you know, this fan community and stuff like that. But I can't think of anything else he's been in where he's been given this much to do. And like I said, he seems to be just having a delightful time. And it's always fun playing the villain. And back to what I was saying before, maybe what he's really doing is underplaying it, and that's a little bit of a surprise to me, because it would be so easy just to go over the top if you're a 25-year, you know, just force of evil roaming the land, clearly killing everybody you fucking can. How many people has he killed in the first 2 hours? I mean,
right.
he is a murder bot in this. And but he's he's playing it pretty cool, and I like that. I like that decision, and I'm sure that's probably a decision that, that Lynch and Frost and he came to together.
The music for me is extremely compelling. I think the original Twin Peaks theme song is probably one of the best themes ever. Mm-hmm. And I was very curious to see if they were going to stick with that for the new season or if they were going to sex it up. But what's more noticeable to me is how the episodes end.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's one of my favorite aspects.
You know, I don't want to make this comparison because I love it, but it reminds me a lot of the ending of the couple episodes in the second season of True Detective, which was directly influenced by Twin Peaks.
Oh, yes.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you guys noticed this, but in the credits, David Lynch is credited as a sound mixer.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
he does all his own stuff. Yeah,
I mean, I think, and as alert listeners will know, we interviewed his longtime sound engineer at his studio last year, John Neff. And my suspicion is, I mean, Lynch was good with sound prior to that, but I'll bet he probably hung over his shoulder for that decade and really knows what he's doing behind the mixing board. You know, not to mention the fact he's put out several albums in the years since Inland Empire.
Music videos,
so,
too.
Yeah, music and sound, I mean, they are all such important pieces to the palette that he's painting off of.
And yeah.
He did something with Donovan, like, 10 years ago, I thought. It was like a meditation book that he wrote, and then I think Donovan did, like, music or an album to accompany the book or something like that. I want to ask you guys really quick, what's with the fucking noise in the Black Lodge? I think that's the creepiest thing ever.
Mm-hmm. It's this weird ambient frequency that's always been
like,
there.
Right, and it's like, I think, and how people stutter when they blink, and it's just like, I want to know what that noise actually is, not necessarily pertaining to the lore of the show. But I just think that is one of the creepiest noises ever.
Yeah.
It's like a mummy dragging its foot, but not quite.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. I like I said, my favorite scene is him and Laura, and I loved how the sound of the record and all that, but then the ambient sound you're talking about, but also how when she's communicating with him, she keeps almost falling asleep.
Yeah.
With her eyes, and then she, like, snaps back. Like, thought, God, I thought that was
That's like blinking backwards, you know. That's film blinking and it's played backwards. It's just so creepy. Same with the stepping, you know. The stepping sounds just south of normal somehow, and it's all just kind of done backwards. Like.
And awesome. I did want to throw in there just because I discovered today that the documentary about Lynch is now on.
The Art and Life one.
Yeah, it's on digital now. For rental, I plan on checking it out this weekend. And that might give us some more insight into like the sound creation and all that kind of stuff, because it really gets into his process more than his works.
I would really like that, because I've seen about 3 Lynch documentaries now. You know, the original one was Don't Look at Me, which was made, I think, not long after Blue Velvet. That was a French production. And then Pretty as a Picture, The Art of David Lynch came out, when that documented him making Lost Highway. And then Lynch 1 is the third one I've seen, and that one is about him making Inland Empire. And it's funny, for as generous as he is with access and everything, you do still walk out of all 3 of those with not a lot of information, you know, on his real technical process, whether it be sound recording or writing or any of that.
One little thing that I noticed as well with The Art of Life, when I was adding it to my watch list on Amazon, the art is a Criterion cover. So, they did that with The Lure from the Polish horror musical earlier this year, and I know that Janus Films bought the rights for that, so, and I know that they did Criterion, I think last month, did the little teaser picture of Firewalk with Me.
Frank was saying
so,
that.
So I'm wondering if we're going to get 2 Lynch-related Criterions in 1 year, because, I mean, check it out on Amazon, I mean, it's the cover of the Criterion.
They,
what it looked like.
They just need to put out a David Lynch box set like they did with the BBS box set. Or the Cassavetes box set, you know, because the Firewalk with Me is huge. That's a huge, because the only way you can see that on Blu-ray is within that big Twin Peaks bundle, right? That big,
yeah, that's
big gold box. And isn't there supposed to be some like 3.5 hour original cut of Firewalk with Me?
Well, that's
something.
Three and a half hour original cut.
There's the missing pieces. Yeah, there's the missing pieces. And I'm sure somebody has done a fan edit, Bill. I haven't watched one myself. I just watched the missing pieces. And you could see why they were cut scenes, you know. But those, Frank, were a holy grail amongst fans for, you know, 25 years until it's actually the blue set, the complete mystery, it's called, ha ha ha, minus 18 fucking hours more, which we'll all be dishing out more money for next year when the complete mystery comes out. But, they've done a really nice job over the years of milking fans with these different releases, because there was the gold box set, and that's got a whole host of extras on it that you're not going to find anywhere else. And now there's the complete mystery, which is the Blu-ray set, which has the missing pieces, which is all the cut scenes from Firewalk with Me. I can't think of too many of them that were actually really vital, would have been vital to the story that was told in Firewalk with Me.
Well, they were mostly like Twin Peaks residents who were cut out of the, you know, the theatrical cut of Firewalk with Me.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of people were choked about that for years, right? Because it was more about Laura, and they wanted it to be shorter. And with that, you get like little snippets, so you get like Ed and Norma here or Josie there, and a lot of it wasn't much in the way of information as to what's going on. It was just kind of like golden nuggets for fans of the
Fan service?
Yeah, more or less.
Speaking of which, this brings up an important question, because so far, and not to take away from a single frame of the new episodes, but do you feel like some of the old cast coming back is going to be used more as fan service than as something that's really central to the mystery going on?
I think that no matter how hard you try to not make it look like fan service, it's just going to a little bit, because 90% of bringing back Twin Peaks, well, not 90%, but a lot of it is to make fans happy, because if there weren't fans who wanted it back, it wouldn't come back. If it wasn't ever popular and didn't ever get this cult status, it wouldn't be back, you know?
True.
So bringing back these characters is vital, and they're going to have these entrances, and they're going to have these knowing kind of winky type ways of bringing them back, and you can't really avoid it feeling a little bit centered towards the fans, I guess.
Mm-hmm. I kind of disagree, only with the idea that, and I didn't think this, I thought exactly that until I watched it, and like 15 minutes in, and I was like, Lynch is like, you know, it was unfinished. There was all the issues with season 2 and the production and all that, and I know he's always wanted to come back, and yes, it's a cult hit and everything, but he's not the kind of, at least from what I think, the kind of filmmaker that does anything for anyone other than himself, you know what I mean?
Sure.
And so I feel like, yes, there will be those moments, but I think they're all integral to what he's trying to do. I don't think he's going to do any kind of fat. I think everything matters, everything has a place. This is his, I don't want to use the word masterpiece, but you know, this is this is his life's work. This is going to be the greatest thing that he's ever attempted. Will it work? I don't know, but it's working thus far. But I really think that, I mean, like those first two episodes, like I said, I mean, I was just like, whoa, this is not at all what I was expecting at all, in the best possible way.
Right.
But I don't think so at all. I think that he chose to come back to this world because he had unfinished business. And it's haunted him, and he's working through that, and we get to experience him working through that with him.
So,
look,
like,
the word masterpiece is synonymous with David Lynch.
True. Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's
James Mangold, no. But
Lynch is exempt for many poking fun at the word masterpiece.
For sure.
Right. He's proven himself, you know. He's earned that stripe.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think so. And he does, in his own unique way, tend to top himself every time out. So, I mean, that's arguable. It depends a little bit on your taste here and there. You know, you give or take a title or two. But really, I think he's always one-upped himself. I think he's doing it here now. I guess I was just thinking of, like, and I saw some people online complaining about this a little bit, like seeing James and Shelley at the end of this episode before the chromatics kick in. or as the chromatics are kicking in, I should say. You know, there was not a lot that was, there wasn't really much that was forwarding anything. But at the same time, Kyle, you know, you make a point that, the good point, that he doesn't really do things that don't have a purpose. That's never been his MO. Even when he's wasting time or making you wait for a payoff, he's doing it with a purpose. So, they, you know, Shelley talked a little bit about her daughter, and she's seeing someone that, that Shelley doesn't trust. And, you know, Shelley probably knows bad men in her life at this point, so she's probably got a
yeah.
pretty good radar. We'll call it her Leo radar. So, yeah, that could certainly be leading somewhere. And sometimes I do think, and we'll see a little more of this in the coming episodes, they're leading to funny places. And they're just, you know, I think Lynch is trying to get a laugh in his own way. And that may be the only end of it. It may not be, well, that funny scene actually will pop up later as being vital to the murder mystery. But, you know, I think you're right. I'm just wondering, as it rolls out, if they are going to feel as vital, or if we are going to get a variety of Twin Peaks-based story with some of our old familiar friends that doesn't really wrap into it all. I hope it
does. But isn't
does.
That what you guys want, though? But, I mean, don't you
yeah.
want that? Don't you
well,
want
Tim,
to see these characters as a fan service, even if it's not necessarily significant to the overall arc of the new season?
Not really. I want to
yeah.
see
really?
It used well. If they're just paraded out and shown to us, which so far a few of them, you know, Ben and Jerry,
and
yeah. James
yeah.
and Shelley have, you know, Dr. Jacoby's got something going on. That's clear.
Yes.
But and Hawk and the Log Lady are clearly very vital. And you know, Andy and Lucy are there, and they're delightful as always. I love seeing those guys. But if they are just coming out and showing their faces in Twin Peaks and we give a little fanboy round of applause and then go back to the main story, yeah, I'd like to see them be vital. But I also think
but
we're
even
really
in
the process.
Even in season one, though, at like the height of like the greatness, that was kind of a thing. There was always some characters off doing their own thing
mm-hmm.
while like the main kind of mystery was going on, you know?
True. I think they were trying to do something different with the original series than what they're doing now, though. And we touched on that early in the broadcast, just about the fact that that was a show made in 1989 for the ABC network with, you know, Mark Frost brought in from kind of standard procedurals. There were a lot of more constraints, and they were trying to launch an ongoing soap opera where, as Lynch has always said, the
True.
Mystery of Laura's death would actually fade into the background. I don't know how the fuck he thought he was going to do that, by the way. I think there's a reason that didn't work, because really, everybody did care. They cared a lot. He did it such a good job of making a dead character a character you cared about and were interested in. Of course, people were going to want to know what happened. But anyway, I think he is in much more of a I'm doing this for me place now.
Yes.
So, you know, I don't see the need for a bunch of fan service. Like you said, he's clearly run off with Showtime's money, and he's made 18 more
yep.
hours of exactly
yep.
what he wants to fucking do, which is marvelous in my opinion.
And I think I have a question for Bill, but I want to say that I think this is kind of like the natural progression on his, like, what one of my very astute friends calls, like, supernatural identity theft.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of starts with Lost Highway and then Mulholland Drive and Inland Empire. Now this, I mean, like, they've all got that kind of undercurrent
mm-hmm.
of, like, identity and persona and different selves and all that, that all still kind of play with that whole thing where he's always talking about, like, love and intimacy and how that can be awful with respect to the abuse of Laura, and then, like, you know, with Lost Highway and, like, adultery, and then, you know, Mulholland Drive, like, love and obsession, you know, just all that kind of stuff. So I feel like he's building on it. But what I want to ask Bill, because Bill's, like, the most diehard fan probably in here, is that you were clearly blown away by this. And I think we've hit on what we like and what's working, but I want to know what, for you, what really made you so happy with these new episodes?
Well, just like this, but pretty much with the new episodes, like the scale, like him, Dave Lynch embracing the visuals, the CGI, just the practicals, I just wasn't expecting that. Like, the expansiveness of the Black Lodge down the Red Room into, like, you know, where you see, like, him falling in the pit for a long period of time, like, where it looks like outer space. Also, wait, I don't want to go too far into this episode 3.
I know, I keep slipping into wanting to talk about the third episode, because it's such a great episode.
Same.
But yeah, next week, patient listeners, next week. But yeah, he does really expand the look and just the insanity of the Black Lodge using mixing in those new effects. I agree.
Exactly. Yeah, I didn't think he was going to embrace it to that extent. I was floored up. Holy shit.
Mm-hmm.
Just went to a whole different place.
Yeah.
I loved it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But Kyle, I think Tim is the biggest super fan here. He's been waiting 25 years, literally.
True.
I've just been waiting 3.5.
You know what's funny is I introduced a friend of mine to Twin Peaks for the first time about maybe 2 weeks, 3 weeks before the premiere started. And she binged the entire series, even the parts of season 2 that some of my friends have been like, I'm not watching that. Mm-hmm. And she got to we watched the finale about half an hour before the premiere date of season 3. So she got to the end and she's like, oh my God, he's Bob. Like, what do we do now? And I'm like, well, we watch new Twin Peaks that's on in half an hour. And I was like, you don't know how lucky you are just to be able to sit down, watch that finale with that crazy cliffhanger, and to be able to have maybe 20 minutes to sit, think, ruminate about it, and get to continue on from there. 25 years later in the space of half an hour or so. Imagine having to wait 25 years. And I was like, you're the luckiest person right now to be able to do that. I had to wait almost 10 years, which is bad enough, but Kyle, I'm sorry, man.
No, I've been waiting since the original broadcast, and I had the same thing with my wife, because Saturday night, we'd been doing catch-up on season 2, and Saturday night, we finished up the finale at probably midnight or something, and then I turned to her, and I was like, now you see why longtime Twin Peaks fans are shitting their pants, because has been a 25-year cliffhanger. And, of course, because of the line in there, I'll see you again in 25 years, it just feels like he just intended to do it all along, which is hilarious. And I like, by the way, how he's taken that line and used that. I think they really kind of went, you know, gathered around that line and were like, okay, let's absolutely work with that. And you know, apparently a timer has gone off and Dale can get out now, or can he?
Yeah.
And, you know, I like the way they're working that. And certainly, as we discussed before, I really like the conception of Evil Coop, who's just been out there a scourge on the land for 25 years. Clearly not just restricted to Twin Peaks. He's been all over the place.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Anyway. One thing I was going to ask was, it has to do with the 25 years thing, but do you guys know what the backstory was between when this was first announced and then the fallout with, like, David Lynch just pulling out of the project? Do you remember when that happened?
The fallout was Easter 2015, because I was in bed depressed all day because of it.
Remembers, he's still like scarred. Bitch.
Yeah, but when I read up, back in 2012, they kind of, like, Mark Frost or David Lynch, they approached one of another kind of pitching, maybe let's return. And he worked on it for a while before they pitched it to Showtime, and I guess they announced it in October 2015, and fallout. They had a fall in April, then in May 2016. Sorry, just like,
yeah.
Don't talk, I get like,
yeah, because I remember this was announced years ago, and then everybody was just kind of like patiently waiting, and Showtime just kept like stoking the fire. They'd release a poster like a year and a half ago, and then I'm not sure when the actual trailer came out, but it seemed like this was in limbo for a very long time.
What happened was David didn't back down, you know? Like, they didn't want to give him enough money. They didn't want to give, I guess, creative control. And then he just couldn't budge on it. And now look what he's got. Now look what he's got away with. Because he didn't compromise. He never has.
And here's another interesting thing. I was reading a New York Times article that the premiere episode only garnered 500,000 viewers. And I'm not sure how that counters in streaming services and stuff like that. But I think that's interesting, partly because this is a fan show, or I shouldn't say a fan show, but partly because this is a show with a gigantic cult following. But you have to think that Showtime's like looking at this as like, where are our Game of Thrones numbers, or where's our True Detective numbers, or, you know, where's our Homeland numbers?
Maybe. What I read, and I read that same article, I know exactly what you're talking about, and as it notes in there, that's not the only metric by which, you know, because they're not driven by advertising dollars, it's not the only metric by which they judge success, and they're very delighted about all the new subscribers that they've gotten signed up for this. That's what they're trying to do, is get people to sign up, and they have had the best spike in Showtime subscriptions, I think, that they said that they've ever had. So I think as far as they're concerned, that's successful. And also, you got to keep in mind, as you note, it's a worldwide phenomenon. So, like, I know some of our friends sitting down in Brazil are watching it on Netflix because that's the international deal that they set up for it. And I think over
huge in Europe,
and it's doing well in Europe. But I don't think all the European countries are carrying it through Showtime. I think they've got side deals with other carriers and stuff. So, you know, the true numbers are probably bigger. And you know, I know one person who doesn't give a fuck, and that's David Lynch. So, you know,
no,
this is it,
but
you know,
but I think an interesting discussion to have is, I don't know if Showtime has really ever had a flagship series, and I mean, I know Homeland's big, and Dexter was huge, and then they took a huge shit after season 4, and everybody fell off the back wagon. Ray Donovan's good. I loved Californication. That's one of my favorite shows, but I mean,
Shameless is that, fun. Yeah, Homeland.
Right,
Penny,
but I mean,
Penny,
Homeland.
Penny,
yeah. But,
Penny Dreadful.
But, Penny, yeah, which got, I think that got canceled, I want to say, but
I know.
No, it didn't.
No,
it
they,
didn't?
Yeah, they had a plan. It ended.
They pulled the plug kind of abruptly on that. Yeah, I think they closed the story off but they pulled the
plug. I know HBO is an unfair comparison because it seems like they roll out a new flagship show every couple of years. Some don't take off, like Vinyl. Vinyl never took off. I thought that was going to be their next big show. I think the only other comparable network is probably AMC, even though that's on a premium station, because they fucking Mad Men, Breaking Bad, Better Call Saul.
Well, and I think Starz is bringing it pretty hardcore.
I know you're
trying.
Yeah,
they're trying to get in the game too. But yeah, I mean, it's still
a
universe where it's HBO and everyone else. Yeah. So,
but I almost wonder if like Showtime's banking on Twin Peaks being their, you know, their thing, and then there's not going to be a season 2. Mm-hmm.
I don't think this was written with a season 2 in mind.
That's what I'm thinking too.
Everything Lynch has indicated is this is an 18-hour movie that we shot.
And then what's Lynch say?
Go
I'm done.
Yeah. And, Lynch, you know, he's 71. I mean, he claims he was misquoted about never making a movie again. That was bouncing around the internet for a week or so, and then he said, no, I was misquoted. I think anything's possible, but I also think Lynch is 71 years old. I think he's got a variety of other enthusiasms that he chases down. I think he's perfectly happy to sit in his, you know, he owns a couple houses in the Hollywood Hills. One of them's a studio. He can go paint. He can go make music. He can go, you know, shoot a video if he feels like getting behind a camera. I mean, that's what he's been doing since Inland Empire. And unless somebody else is going to line up and hand him the kind of change that Showtime clearly did, as well as the creative control, then I think he's fine walking away from it. I mean, I thought, as most fans did, I thought he was done after Inland Empire. I thought he was just cashed out, and he shot a few commercials here and there. He did a couple of music videos, concert videos for people. He did a Duran Duran concert video, which I have not seen.
Awesome.
I guess I'm not a completist because I haven't seen David Lynch do Duran
Duran.
It's awesome. But it probably, well, you know, it's Duran Duran. So that makes sense, but I wouldn't be surprised if this is it. But the fact that we have been gifted with 18 new hours of David Lynch, you know, just straight unfiltered, as unfiltered as you're going to get on a television screen, is just a miracle to me, and I'm so thankful. And I'm just going to keep watching these things over and over until they're burned into my brain, which is basically what I did with the original series anyway. So we're probably about up against it, gentlemen. I think let's wrap it up. If you guys
Sounds
have
good.
Any final comments you want to make, Frank, anything?
No, I'll try and be better. the next time I join a Twin Peaks podcast.
I'll try to do better.
Do me a favor. Right. Just a little bit of homework. Go watch the final 2 hours of the series.
I got a three-day weekend.
Oh, there you go. Well, you could watch even more.
I got a three-day weekend.
Yeah,
I can pound it out.
Check it out. I think you'll really like it, and I think it'll help, you know, give you a little more framing for what the hell's going on. Bill, how about you?
Sorry, what was that?
Any final thoughts? Any parting shots you want to take?
I don't know. Just curious about that apparition still in the jail cell.
The apparition in the jail cell, I hope we come to know at least a little more about. Because I watched that again today, and it really was. And it was coming on the heels of that scene that I think ratchets up so emotionally so quickly, you know, where you think it's going to be a nice, comforting wife, and then, like, minutes later, it's, fuck you, well, fuck you. And then, yeah, there's that guy.
Yeah.
So, I hear you. I'm looking forward to that, too. Kyle, any final thoughts on the first episode?
I deeply, deeply love it. For anybody that's listening who is just curious about this world and doesn't know all the references and everything, I think a good primer, if you don't have a lot of time, is the last 2 hours of the show, and Firewalk with Me is a good starting point. There's some great, like, one-hour videos on YouTube, Vimeo, whatever, that kind of sum up a lot of the action and a lot of where the story is. But I also think that it's not necessary, per se. But I do think that, like, Inland Empire, Lost Highway, Mulholland Drive, like seeing the later films can kind of help you appreciate more. Maybe not understand. I'm not even entirely sure.
That's kind of the boat I'm in.
You know, I'm not sure we're meant to understand. Or, you know, as with all of his films, you take what you bring with you. You take away what you bring with you into the theater, you know, while you're watching on the TV. But this is truly a pretty exciting time to be a Twin Peaks fan.
Absolutely.
Agreed.
All right, Nate? Just blown away,
Everything I could have hoped for and more, man. And it's only been 4 episodes I've seen so far, and I feel like I've watched, you know, Dimensions unfold. Above all, I'm just grateful that we're getting this. All summer, too. This is going to go all summer. So, what can I say?
How is Showtime going to roll this out? Because they did the first 4 episodes on their streaming platform, so I'm assuming they're just going to go Or are they going to
air
them more episodes on the streaming platform?
I think they're going to air them hour by hour now, and then they'll appear on the platform as they air on TV.
I think what I read is 3 and 4 is this weekend, like, airing normally. And then starting the following Sunday, it will be 1 episode at a time, like a normal.
So we'll have to wait a week, old school style.
Yeah.
Yes.
The finale would be 2 in 1 day, though.
We've gotten spoiled this.
I know. We were super spoiled this weekend, and I figured they'd probably start tapering it off. You know, if they started to play them in 2-hour blocks every week, I'd worry that they were trying to burn them off or something.
Right.
So
yeah.
I like 1 more 2-episode shot followed by 1 at a time. That's fine. It will definitely leave me wanting more, but it'll
full
leave
hours.
Me rewatching. Oh, yeah. They're
full hours, no commercials, so we get a shit ton, even if it's just 1 hour a week, which I'm happy
And then I think Bill was saying the finale is going to be the last 2 hours.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful.
Oh, man. Another Twin Peaks finale. I'm almost getting scared just thinking about it, what kind of fuckery he's going to throw at us in this time around, right?
Yeah.
I just can't believe it's happening.
Yeah,
I know.
Again.
And it is happening. It is happening again. That's right.
I was pitching myself during the credits.
Same. It felt surreal.
Yeah.
As it should.
You know, the new episodes to me so far have just felt like the perfect combination of familiar and new. And above all else, as always, David Lynch being true to himself and doing exactly what he wants to do and not caring what you think about it one way or the other. Come along for the ride or, you know, go pull out your Desperate Housewives DVDs. I don't know. He doesn't care.
Which Dale Cooper is in.
Dale Cooper is in.
That's right. One of his many, many fine roles. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for tuning in, everyone. We appreciate you listening. We'll see you in the trees.
See you in the
later.
Trees.
Adios.